This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. Be more excited for the conversation I just had. Patrick, not Picard, Stewart, and Philip Donnelly of Articulated Points joined me in conversation. These guys worked on Yo-Jo for years. They are part of Joe Declassified. Pat is on the Full Force podcast. Philip joins What's on Joe Mind regularly. And they have an entire catalog of things they've done throughout the Joe community and other toy communities. For the last few years, they have had a YouTube channel called Articulated Points. I was so lucky to have them sit down with me and just have a moment to tell them how much I enjoyed what they do, and the conversation just grew from there. I think we had met once during JoeCon, but I didn't really get to meet you and talk to you until Joe Fest, and you guys had just started the channel.
Yes.
In your first couple of videos, you didn't have a wall behind you.
Well, there, but it was just a wall.
Yes. You told me you had some advice that you needed toys behind you, and then suddenly, you know, I know you as a G.I. Joe guy and a StarCom guy, but your wall is an everything. I'm trying to figure out what you don't collect at this point.
Well, collect or accumulate. What's the proper phrase for what's behind me here? Because some of this stuff is just stuff that I thought was neat, and so I will take one of it. And then for the way that I keep my collection organized, some of it doesn't really fit in. And other things, I did consciously think, hey, this would be a cool thing. You know, like having Steve Austin or Rom behind me. You know, those are childhood things that I think are part of my character. You know, part of my identity is toys. So I want to have them behind me. But then there's also things that are on here that are just like, I don't know what to do with General Kale, because I just got a Willow toy for $1 at a toy show in a dig bin, and he doesn't really belong anywhere in my collection. So maybe somebody will think it's cool to see him there behind me. And so I just put it there for added detail, because that's fun.
I would like to point out that by having ROM, you do in fact have the entire toy line for ROM. So
that is true.
Also, I will say this, Pat does not collect Photon. So those two figures you see in his background, they are only there because I mailed them to him.
This is absolutely true.
It's funny because I know my cousin had a couple laser tag, like vests and guns, but I had never heard of Photon before your guys' episode.
You know what? Philip set me straight on a lot of Photon facts when he was putting together that Photon episode. Like, I grew up having Photon and feeling like I had the lesser of the toys.
Yeah.
Because, you know, friends of mine had laser tag. But then Phillip's pointing out, no, it's Photon is more accurate, shoots farther, came first. Like, all these facts are like, oh, well, Photon's the clear winner. I guess I was just silly as a kid.
Laser tag had the better brand recognition, though, which is why everybody had it.
Transformers and GoBots. GoBots came out first. Everybody remembers Transformers.
Correct.
It hurts, though, because Photon actually had physical laser tag arenas that you would go to.
Wow.
Like, this wasn't just a toy for home use. This was, like, big. This was a big thing. And now it's just forgotten. Nowhere in the zeitgeist. No cultural significance anymore.
So you are the lone gunman keeping the dream alive.
There's, like, 10 other people out there, but we don't talk.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's only two of the toys, so he has to compete against the other 9 guys every time one of them gets posted on eBay, and one of them has deep pockets, so it's difficult.
Never going to find a Basin or a Pyrar.
Are you part of D-Class, Philip?
I think if we go into talking about why we do stuff on YouTube, as opposed to just making it audio. For a hot minute there, D-Class actually had a podcast.
I've listened to it.
I was actually part of that podcast. And that first episode, there were so many people on it, I got in one line. I made two, but one was not suitable for airing.
Sure.
Instead of just leaving me out, they just cut it all together. And that's it. And then was not on any of the other podcasts. The idea is that there would actually be two full casts and we would like alternate. And Pat and I would have been like, I was thinking like, we're the night crew, you know? But we never got around to actually making any episodes. So I only appear for one line in that first episode. And then after what, five or six podcasts, they just kind of stopped. One of the reasons I wanted to make sure we were on YouTube and video is because they were always talking about these cool unproduced stuff, but you then had to go to a website and look up those pictures and they had to be hosted tied into that particular episode. So you had to like dig for where those pictures were. And if they got buried in a message board, you then had to search for it. And we all know search in message boards is terrible. Even in Facebook, if you put pictures in there after 3 days, you're not finding them again.
Correct.
That was one of the things, like, we're showing a visual medium. I mean, it's also tactile, but we can't do that over internet, right? So we had to focus on the visual, why we decided we had to make it a video and not just audio. It didn't work as audio.
It is an interesting thing. And as someone who is audio only, to have a toy-based podcast or a toy-based audio only anything, we are into the tactile, the beauty of toys, the packaging, the blueprints, the cross sells. And so many of us are without video, and it's odd, but I mean, I know why I don't do video. And I think, Pat, you encompassed that greatly when you said you were working on 40 to 50 hours of editing for Articulated Points. So, eesh.
Yeah, this edit's a killer. Part of the reason why I wanted to do a video show was because my editing skills for audio are so terrible that showing shiny pictures can distract the audience from my terrible audio editing skills. But over time, I've personally developed a lot more as like an editor, and it's hard to go back even 2 years to some of the earlier stuff that I edited, because I could just see stuff and I'm like, man, I could have timed that a lot better. Like, the thing I said could have come up right whenever I said it, or it could have lingered on it a little bit longer, or I could have zoomed into a better part, or I could have cleaned up the color of the picture before I put it in there. Like, there's a lot of stuff that I'm now doing that I didn't used to do. And over time, I've also started to look at my timeline. So whenever I start off the edit, used to be there was just Philip on one line and me on the other. In a few spots, there'd be pictures because we'd plan out what pictures we were going to use in advance. But now I just want this thing to have like everything. I want it to be shooting all the guns at once, like everything just packed in as much as possible. And I start looking for spots where there hasn't been a picture for a while. And why do you want to look at my mug whenever you could be looking at G.I. Joe's, which is what we're talking about? But yeah, the part of the reason why I wanted to do video was, without joking, well, I am joking, but also my hearing isn't as great as my visual sense. So I wanted to do video primarily.
I get the growing as you guys move forward and everything in the past is ugly. Because even though I don't have the visual, I could still say that about my audio. I used to cut so much together that to me, like, my first few episodes sound chipmunky because I just didn't give enough space between words because I was worried that people would just be like, oh, dead space, turn it off.
Yeah, and I've done that as well, but that's where I cover it up with a fancy picture.
Well, what I like about your guys' show, because you guys talk about more than just G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah.
I am predominantly G.I. Joe with a side of Transformers. And yeah, we finished our mask collection and we've done Sky Commanders and we've done a few other things. Starcom, Exo Squad, there's a handful. And it's interesting. I've watched every, like, the Disney episodes. I'm actively watching, you know, Philip, you put together a town.
Yeah.
It's not even because I'm looking to collect Disney, but I'm like, oh shit, this is a toy. This is interesting. Look at these packages. You start putting it together. Like, how do you guys even determine, all right, this time we're going to talk about Joe. This time we're going to talk about Photon, Disney, or with the mini episodes, is there a lot of editing or is it just like somebody runs and guns and throws something up?
All of these are pretty much our own personal obsessions that we're putting on display. There is no conceivable way somebody would organize a G.I. Joe podcast and then put in Disneyland right in the middle of it, right? We're weird. So it's like, if we're going to have a podcast, we're going to show off our own weirdness in all its inconsistencies and incongruencies. And so that's where the Disney stuff came in. And then Photon, it's like, I just have this obsession with Photon going back to the early 90s, and nobody else has heard of the damn thing. I just want to talk about it because I have no one to talk to about this. And that's where a lot of this comes from.
So once you have Pat on camera, he's your captive audience?
Pretty much, yeah. like I said, I mailed him figures because he wasn't interested in getting them himself.
And I could see them right there.
I had a bit of interest. I just thought that was where the Photon ended. And then, you know, several months later, the helmet showed up too. No exaggeration. He was like, yeah, but it needs to have the helmet. As well as a custom leg band that Philip created that looks probably honestly better than the one that was released. I think you regret sending that.
A little bit, but I can make a new one. It's fine. I still have all the parts.
But you haven't made a new one.
Yeah.
No, I have an actual one. Oh.
Yeah, there's not really any real reason behind what we pick. I think that it's just a matter of us being collectors and people who are genuinely interested in toys. And a lot of this also comes out of, aside from, you know, the declassified starter, Philip and I would just talk about things that we were interested in because we both were working on Yojo.com and we'd chit chat about that a little bit. But then it would turn into, well, look at this cool Transformers stuff that I'm checking out right now. And it got to be to a point where Philip just kept on showing me stuff that I wasn't seeing online. So I knew that there was something there that we could put out there that maybe some other people would appreciate seeing. Like occasionally in some of those early conversations, there was some cool stuff. Like I think that one of the things maybe was even in the first episode was all of the Action Man stuff from around the world that was, you know, essentially Happy Meal stuff, kid meal things.
Yes.
And that got put into an episode. But the reality of the situation was, I had already seen almost all that stuff because Philip had a genuine, just natural interest in it and was going after buying it because it's that excitement of learning about something as you are also just exploring it for yourself. Like the information wasn't readily available and he's showing this to me and it's like, this is all amazing and G.I. Joe related. It needs to be out there in some fashion. So, yeah, so we finally started recording thanks to Philip because if it had been up to me, we probably would still be polishing our skills before we got started.
But yeah, you know how we talked about the episodes looking terrible at the beginning? Yeah, he wanted to make sure everything was perfect. I'm like, it's never going to be perfect. We're just going to have to start it and get better and learn as we go because otherwise we're never getting off the ground. Like you had this idea for us to do the podcast at least a year ahead of time, if not two, before we actually made our first recording.
I did, but part of what I wanted was I knew those YouTube algorithms would be beating us up. And what I wanted to do was maybe record out like 6 to 10 episodes in advance and then just release them as a season, like maybe in a matter of 2 or 3 months and then just be quiet again. And I don't really know if YouTube's algorithm would have liked that either, to be honest.
I don't understand the algorithms, but I do understand that every time I sit down and watch one of your guys' things, I don't feel like I'm a D-class expert of G.I. Joe, but I feel like I'm a pretty goddamn good brain on G.I. Joe. But I still expect to see or hear things that either I've never seen or heard before, or I've only seen or heard in private conversations because things don't show up online. And then you guys dive into these other toy lines and other things. You know, we've already mentioned Starcom a couple of times. I got Starcom from a gift. I just kind of set it to the side and let A discover it on his own. And when he started going through it, he's freaking out. He finds the Starcom website to do all the research, and then he sees at the bottom of it, Patrick Stewart. Dad, guess whose website this is? At that point, I reached out to you, and I was like, hey, I'm just getting into this. Saw that it was your site. He went through, learned everybody's names. He's making lists of which figures we don't have. He's asking about things that are European release only.
but you know, and you guys already mentioned Yo-Jo, which I know I'd seen your guys' names for years before I met either of you with Yo-Jo, because all the photos had your, they were all attributed to you. And now that Yo-Jo is sort of what it is, you guys are working behind the scenes with 3D Joes, or I know you were at one time. I don't know if any of that's still going on.
Like I said, I've done 40 hours or 50 hours of editing recently for Articulated Points. So that's really like the official answer to that is yes. I am still helping at 3D Joe's. I just am awful and haven't done anything for a long time. I did work with Chris Murray. We were very happy and passionate about getting some of the glossary on the website more filled out, and you know, then going back and forth on what definitions worked and what ones didn't, and what needed to be defined and what was too much and what needed to be in there. And yeah, that was a fun time, and it's there now, but I would like to do more. And as Chris is doing more stuff for Declassified, you will see that going up on 3D Joe's. So Carson's incredibly helpful. I think that I've been at 3D Joe's every day for the last month, borrowing pictures and doing some other things. some of these packaged pictures, I don't know why I would ever even look somewhere else. They're right there and they're available. And he's so sharing that it's nice to have that resource. So yes, I am always about the community and trying to make sure that information is available to people, and Carson makes sure that it is available and stays available. So yes.
You know, one of the reasons why we didn't start this podcast under Yo-Jo was because we didn't want to cover just G.I. Joe. And, you know, at the time it was still the preeminent website for G.I. Joe archiving, and we just didn't want to mislead anyone or anything about that, or just be, you know, in the wrong category. And boy, did we end up dodging a bullet there. We lost Yo-Jo to a new corporate owner, and nothing we said or did could get it to the point where we could actually do anything with it to add to it. And so we eventually just had to walk away. And so, yeah, we turned to 3D Joe's, but I think, yeah, we're really busy with Articulated Points now. And also, I know I'm kind of burned out on archiving G.I. Joe's because of the Yo-Jo experience, how that ended.
Well, you guys have been doing it for 20 years at this point, right?
Officially, my first contribution to Yo-Jo was 1998, but I wasn't really on staff until 2006.
I found Yo-Jo in the summer of 2000. I used to use Yo-Jo just to drool and research and enjoy. So I've been using Yo-Jo for a long time, even when I wasn't collecting the toys.
Yeah, I tried to help early on getting some of the pictures up for some of the later stuff. By the time I was helping in maybe 98, a lot of the figures up through, say, 1991 were already done. Or at least there was an entry with all the accessories shown. But then there still was 1993 was such a beast of a year even to collect it. There was a lot of that that was missing. So if it's a vintage line figure that has my image there, it probably would be somewhere in like the 93-94 era, or it would be like a variation. And then I joined the staff in like 2003. Once 2006 rolled around and Philip was doing stuff, I didn't really have to do anything anymore because Philip did everything. Terry and Philip were doing it all the work. And I was just kind of occasionally I'd update the variations list. But then, of course, we also had Josh on comics. Yeah. There were quite a few people who were contributing. I joke, but I stayed on staff, but I wasn't doing a ton of work toward the end myself. Other than talking to Philip every night and giving moral support.
I just want to make sure I was doing the accurate stuff, too. Yeah.
It did help to have another person look at your entry before it went live.
So Articulated Points is really just in a continuation of this friendship that you guys have had for 20 years and are already talking about all these different things. I'm really compelled by like the Marvel stuff. I've already mentioned, you know, Disney, which is way outside of my wheelhouse, but I've watched every episode. But with G.I. Joe, it's fun when you guys start showing like the Action Man stuff, or when you've shown the pre-production things, when you guys talk about the production process, which I know is wild, because at this point it's such a known quantity, but you still see every day online someone doesn't know how things were made, doesn't know how they were produced, or doesn't know how they're made today. And you guys have made that available, whether it's through Yojo, 3D Joe's, Declassified, and also with Articulated Points. What do you guys even have left to collect with G.I. Joe that's not like the next classified pre-order?
You know, I still don't have a full run of the vintage figures. There's still holes in my collection. And even the figures I do have, probably 3/4 of them are incomplete. It's just, you know, the way I collect, it's just, I wanted, you know, the figure, and if it came with a helmet or something, I wanted the helmet. And then that was good enough for me. But then I get to a point where the prices are just too much more, so much more than I want to pay for a figure. That's just like, and I just move on. And, you know, you made peace with that. It just doesn't bother me.
I think for me, a large part of what keeps me driven is learning things, which is why I am crazy about variations. But there may probably still be some of them that I don't actually have in my collection. You just kind of think that you have it, and then it turns out that you don't. So I'm sure that I could go through and do another collection inventory and find out what it is that I'm missing and go after that stuff. I could also probably do a few condition upgrades. I didn't used to care about cracked elbows. And then I had a pretty bad cracked elbow experience. Then I started to kind of care about cracked elbows. So there are some condition things that I could probably upgrade. I know when I was going through my stuff to do a couple of videos, sometimes it's like, that's the condition of the figure that I have to show on Articulated Points to talk about this. Like, I came across my 1993 Bazooka. It was terrible. Like, his knees were snapped. There was paint rubs everywhere. I ended up just, you know, getting another one at the next toy show. But yeah, it was bad. So sometimes I think that I need to go back through. It's just collection maintenance is a lot. But I think the main thing that keeps me driven is learning more about stuff. And lately, I have actually kind of been looking more to the vintage 12-inch line as perhaps a thing that would keep me going. Because, I mean, can you get any better about the history of G.I. Joe than collecting the vintage 12-inch line? Not really. There's a lot to dig into there. So
the 3D Vintage Joes is a good place for research on that.
Yeah.
You know, I know we just talked about Louisville being a little bit of a drive for you, but it was originally a 12-inch show. It's still 50% a 12-inch show. That's where I cut my teeth on the 12-inch. We have around 100 12-inch figures in the house at this point, but not in any sort of focused or completionist manner.
Are they like vintage or Hall of Fame or?
All of it. No sideshow. I miss the sideshow era, and they're so expensive at this point that I haven't gone back to them. I really want the 1,000 toys, Storm Shadow, Snake Eyes, and Duke, because they are so robotic and weird.
Oh, is it happening? This is the first time it's going to happen. There's a rule that happens when I discuss things with Philip, where if you talk with him, it's just next to him.
Yes.
It's next to him.
Mask does not stay on. It's on the ground.
I was going to bring that up earlier, and this would have been the payoff, but I forgot to mention it while I was blathering on, that Philip just has a knack for having the thing that we're talking about next to him.
That's his magic ability?
It is, yeah.
It has become kind of a running joke, yeah.
That's so good. I really want those, but I haven't tried to go back to Sideshow. I also don't have the two ninjas for the 3-0 toys. The Roblox and the Firefly are good, but they weren't great enough for me to jump back to Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow. But I like 12-inch a lot, but it is still a language I don't speak, and I can just sort of read a little. You know what I mean? I can find my way to the bathroom. I can order some food, but I don't speak the language properly. But I get what you mean. I am hard pressed to be in a hobby passively. As I said, like, I was reading Yojo all the way back to 2000, even though I wasn't collecting the toys. You know, and I forget, you know, like the Larry Hama story. Not everybody knows that. And I'm like, yeah, everybody knows Larry Hama. Like, we all know, like, the end of The Office. We got it. And I'm like, yeah, not everybody does. And then what you guys show, whether it's through D-Class or whether it's through Articulated Points, there's always something that I've either never heard of, only heard of in passing or in private conversations, or sometimes I've just forgotten because you guys have such deep esoteric knowledge. It probably is exhausting, I assume, for as many people like myself that come to you guys when it's like, I know a fair damned bit, but I don't know that. So I got to go hit up Pat or Philip or Kaufman or there's five or six people that we all go to, right?
Yeah, that's where I have done well over time with G.I. Joe is just knowing who to ask. And also the other thing that always pops into my head whenever somebody comes up to me with a question is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Sean Connery, where he says, wrote it down so I wouldn't have to remember. Like some things exist in lists. And it is difficult to remember everything, like just what the answer is to things. And people will ask things and it's just like, I don't really know, but I know who to ask. And then they might do the same thing. But yeah, it's always fun to dig through this. I mean, that's kind of what it is to be in a big community of people too, you know? People have the information out there and it's just a matter of having those conversations to learn things. It's one of the fun things anytime we get together to do a panel. Whether it's Philip and I sitting down to do articulated points or going to a Joe show, or I did learn a lot from Chris Murray, actually. It was nuts. But yeah, it's always fun to share that information and to learn stuff myself.
I don't think I ever really explicitly said it out loud, but one of the philosophies I was working under when I was making those JoJo archives is knowing there's always going to be somebody new in the hobby. And so you can't take for granted the information that's out there is going to be readily available to them, or they'll even know where to look. And that's why whenever I create an archive, I try to be as complete as I could be. But then reason, like, you know, you go back in the vintage years and the cross-posting for all the different mold reusages is all over the place. But as we kept going on in 30 years, we're just like, okay, here's where that figure first started. You know, that mold first started. We're not...
Right.
We wanted to list every part usage, but we never quite cracked that puzzle on how to do that efficiently, where it wasn't just, you know, a big pile of text that nobody was ever going to read through except for like three people. Yeah, that's why it's something we always kind of keep to when we're trying to explain these things. It's like, it might be that most of what we're talking about is already known, but not everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And to this day, one of my favorite segments we did on Articulated Points has been the Stars and Stripes Forever set.
That was a cool thing to watch you guys go through.
Yeah, and it's like there were known variations in there, but most of those variations, I didn't know about them until a few years prior. There's a lot of variations on there, and they're not well documented. They're known. They're not well known, but we wanted to make sure they were. And then while we were making the episode, Patrick finds a variation in it we didn't know about.
That, as a viewer, that was crazy exciting. So I can only imagine from your guys' perspective how much more amplified that probably was. But from my side of the screen, I was jaw dropped. I'm watching you on one device, looking at eBay on the other, talking to somebody else on a third. Like, do you see what the fuck is happening here? Like,
I still wonder how that got in my collection, because what I was doing with Stars and Stripes Forever, honestly, was... there's just so many variations on them. So when I would get some of them in, I was just putting them all, like I have a 1997 bin, I just put all of them in there. I used to like open up the accessories, but there's just in there now, there's like a couple of bags of full sets of accessories. So I know what was grouped with what. So I'm not pulling them out to do any comparisons. I have some loose, but they're in there. So like part of me keeps on replaying in my head, did I know about that variation at some point and forgot about it and never put it on a list? But put it in the bin? Or was it just a figure that I had? And as far as I can tell, I just had it. It was very crazy. But that one was a good one. I've seen that topic come up. Dan Armstrong brought up the Stars and Stripes Forever stuff and was having a bit of trouble. And so I was able to go through. I like the feature on YouTube where you can only do it if you're using a web browser, where you click the thing to start your link at a particular minute. And so I was able to copy that and send it to him. And then he and I had a nice back and forth conversation on Stars and Stripes Forever variations. It's nuts, some of the stuff that's out there.
Yeah, I mean, Stars and Stripes is just over the A-Raw line that no one gives a shit about, right?
Yeah, just barely over it. And I still don't have all of them, that's for sure. still looking for that the receding hairline.
That's too many variations.
You get the roadblock with the gold knife.
I don't know.
I love variations, but this is, I think, something, Pat, you and I were talking about at one of the Joe Fests or something, that before my son got involved in collecting with me, you know, I was trying to get everything, all the variations, all the package variations, all the card variations, all the, and I had to take a step back and go, there are people that didn't have a dark age. There are people that collected through puberty in high school and collected in the 90s and in the, you know, 80s. And, you know, I hate when people talk about how we collected as kids. I was like, we played as kids. You know, it wasn't until your teenage years that you went from playing to nothing or playing to collecting. But I had to take a step back and I was like, there's already people that own all this shit. I don't have to do this. It is exhausting financially as well as everything else. I want to know about it. I want to read about it. I want to have conversations and learn. I want to be educated, but I don't have to physically own every variation of every card and paperwork and sticker. And and so I took a big step back, and then my kid got involved and that derailed me completely. There are some archiving things I still want to do because I think I can do it well. But I love that guys like you have been in this hobby at a level that I wasn't at. And I can come and I can stand on your guys' shoulders. So whatever I do is just amplifying what you've already done or working off of what you've already done. I don't have to recreate any wheels.
That's really what I appreciate. I love when there's more input from other people. Whenever I was looking at variations, I didn't always want to collect variations myself. When you don't have like the vintage run, and that is really what you want. You want like an 82 to 94 run. I think it's a lot to think, well, I need to collect every variation from 1983 and 1984 before I can move on to that 1987 and 19. That's craziness. So I was collecting and my younger brother was collecting. We were both building our own set. And as we were doing that, we would find that the one that I had different than the one that he had, and that information was not on Yojo. And so we started adding that. And then I would start to be at shows and it's like, oh, here's a dig bin of figures and they're $2 each or whatever. I can look through here, see if there's any variations that I don't have, if I have had like a slow show and I haven't found any. For me, as far as variations grew from there. And I'm glad for one of the other things that you said is you don't feel the need to own all of them, but you like to know about them. Because that to me was kind of the main thing of putting them on Yojo, because there are some variations like 89 Stalker, where sure, he has the dark brown or the light brown on his legs. There are going to be some people who are just really big Stalker fans and they don't need both of them, but maybe they have a preference. And so that information is there. I mean, that's a minor thing, but then you do have things like Battle Force 2000 figure with a visor or without the visor. Which one do you want? It's just nice to let people know that exists so that they can make their own informed decision, especially as these figures have gotten more and more expensive. You're no longer buying like both of them if you want them just for $5 each. It's kind of some of these are an investment. So if you're going to make that investment, know what variation there is and what one you want and get it.
That was another advantage of Yojo is we could make corrections on the fly as new information came out. And it was like the fandom grew and we could network our pools of knowledge together. Mm-hmm. Where things like the J.C. Penney Cobra Trooper set, where a Cobra came with a bazooka, that wasn't well known when I first started. I don't know if that was known at all, honestly. Now we have 82 figures. You had the thin thumb versus the thick thumb. And then later on, we have reverse rivets before they even get to the swivel arms.
And then you have people like Ryan Smith, who has a micrometer out there measuring the shoulder rivets. I walked away from trying to do all the 82 variations. I feel like I know quite a bit. And then I start talking to you guys at shows or watching D-class panels, or you guys start up articulated points. And I'm like, oh, shit, I know nothing. All right, cool. Let's dig into this sandwich a little bit more. Phil, like, have you ever stopped collecting?
I never stopped. I know I annoyed my grandmother back in 93 because I wanted to buy G.I. Joes instead of like something non-toys. But I saw that commercial for Mega Marines, and Gung-Ho's helmet is just a backwards helmet with a backwards baseball cap with a microphone attached to it. That's so cool. That marketing was aimed squarely towards me. Most G.I. Joe fans hate those years, but I love them. I really strongly considered buying all of G.I. Joe Extreme when it was out and available at like Pick and Save for cheap. Yeah, no, I never stopped buying toys, but I never really became an active collector until Stars and Stripes set came out. And it was so inaccurate to what it was supposed to be that I actively started buying older figures for the first time.
Stars and Stripes created a frustration that could only be filled by going backward.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where I'll just get these figures. That'll be good. Well, maybe I'll get these figures too. And, you know, that's my story. My name is Philip, and I'm a G.I. Joe addict.
I was doing G1 Transformers, and I started with G.I. Joes in 82, started working, you know, finish 82, work on 83, finish 83, work on 84. And with G1, it was like, oh, buy these characters I love, and then we'll get the rest. When I found the community, all that shit went out of whack. When my son got involved, everything went sideways. And it was just like, grab everything I can, as fast as I can, as much as I can, as quickly as I can. My collecting went all out of whack at that point. And at this point, I'm still missing things from 93. But if Alexander hadn't gotten involved, I probably would have finished 94 and then moved right into Stars and Stripes and just worked my way to 2006 and done the middle years, you know, which I know you guys have both played outside of A-Raw as well. Like, are you heavy 4-inch people at all?
I think both of us are probably all caught up on. Philip's probably more current than I am because I think Philip's still doing Reaction. Is that right, Philip?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
I'm caught up to Reaction. So my collection is from 1982 all the way up through and including the 4-inch line and some of the Reaction stuff.
Okay. So you have basically all the way through 2018. We took a break.
Well, I bought the other stuff as well, like all those retro releases that were at Walmart and the Rings.
Oh, yes. I forgot about those.
And the Sky Striker, you know. Yeah, I've bought quite a lot. My break in collecting, and I've told this story before, and people always say, what? I stopped with G.I. Joe in 1985.
Okay.
And started back up again in 1989. And that's kind of where I see my dividing line of being a kid playing with them and being a collector. Because I have a brother 9 years younger than me. And at the time that he got old enough, he was born in 85. So, you know, there's just a lot of changing around of the house. The G.I. Joes got packed up. That wasn't my idea. But at the time, I was, you know, very focused on Transformers. So it's like, okay, that's going to happen. And I've never stopped collecting Transformers. Been doing those since 1984. But those did take a backseat to G.I. Joe because I did only finish my G1 Transformers collection. What was that? 2 years ago? Year and a half? 2 years ago, Philip? Something
I want to say last year, 2023.
Like the entire G1 or just like up until the movie?
No, all of the United States G1. And I've already gotten a good start on Japan. So that's my next goal. My goal for Transformers, really what I would love to have just in my possession, like it would make my day, is to have everything from Generation 1 all the way up through the end of Transformers Cybertron.
Okay.
That's what I would really like to have. But that's also lofty when you consider all the Beast Wars, Japan stuff, you know, the Unicron Trilogy stuff that was different there as well.
You may have to give up on the Lucky Draws.
Oh, yeah. Although I've already given up on those. Yeah. I'm not even thinking about those. But yeah, I started again in 89. 1989 Snake Eyes is just too awesome. And my good friend Brent had shown me his G.I. Joe collection. And I don't know why I had only looked at it as of 1989. Like, he had them around, but he showed me Snake Eyes, and that was it. I had to go buy some. My brother at that point, having been born in 85, he had picked up at what I lovingly refer to as the junk aisle at Hill's department store. If a kid took something back to Hill's that was broken or was missing pieces, they'd slap a price on it, write what was wrong with it on the box, and throw it out for a couple of bucks.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he had already picked up, I think for like 50 cents, a Destro version 2 without the despoiler. So he had a couple of them, but, you know, as of 89, he was vaguely interested in G.I. Joes. And it's like, well, I got like a bunch of them all packed up from 82 up through 85. So yeah, we dug those out and I've been collecting them seriously ever since.
I can't imagine taking a 4-year break. Although, I mean, I guess when I was 15 is when I took a several year break until adult break. For Transformers, though, you know, I found, and it was something that I found with just having a young kid, and we started doing rescue bots. I have a huge rescue bots collection. Love Transformers rescue bots. And I recommend it to every parent I know who's like, I wish my kid was into toys. And I'm like, well, start with rescue bots when they're young. But Transformers Animated is the Transformers that I fell deeply in love with. I might get stoned in the street, but I like Transformers Animated more than G1 now.
That's a bold statement.
I don't think that's as controversial a statement as you'd think. But yeah, there's a lot of love and a lot of deep cuts in Animated. Even for G.I. Joe, there's some, you know, there's Snake Eye shows up.
I didn't know if you were collecting Animated at all, but that is, I'm about 85% of that collection, but I haven't touched it in a couple of years. I'm basically just missing the Japanese stuff.
Yeah, I don't have any of the Japanese stuff, but I'm probably, see, the problem is the one where they get into Animated, and that's even why I say up through Cybertron, is that after that, once that Michael Bay movie hit and Animated hit, that was one where you'd get the same character in like 3 or 4 different scales.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd have like the one step, like, well, now it's like one step changers, but there were other things that were similar to that were like simpler toys. So it's like, what does that even mean to collect all of them up until that point? So no, with Animated, I know that I'm missing a lot of the simple, tiny ones, but I have a good chunk of what I consider to be the main line. Like, I don't really know what I'm missing. If I really try to think about it, I can't think of who I'd be missing. I would like to get some of the later Japanese stuff. I've even bid on some of the Japanese stuff, like
Blackout.
Like Blackout, yeah. Yeah, and the other Optimus Prime that is kind of like Jinrai and Aquatic Bumblebee. I've bid on those, but not won them. Yeah, a little bit behind. I would like those, but don't have them.
Transformers movies also probably when collecting Transformers kind of became out of reach for everybody. You're trying to be a completist.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Like, there were so many exclusives, and some of them were just impossible. There was one where to get a figure, you had to sign up for a credit card in Japan. And there was more than one figure option. You had to get the credit card multiple times to be able to get all of the figures.
That's insane. And well, and you had just a few minutes ago, you had mentioned a lucky something or other.
Lucky draws. Yeah. Those go back to the G1 days where they would have produced in like single digit quantities that you would have to win as like a raffle. And that's still going on. It's still a thing.
That is wild.
There'd be like an all silver or an all gold or one that's just red.
I've seen stuff like that on eBay. Like, I know in Animated, there was like an all gold Prime or an all gold Megatron or something. And I was like, where the hell did this come from? And I wasn't interested in it, but I didn't know about the lucky draws. So I don't know if it was that or something else entirely. I just kind of went all gold pass. But now you have me curious and interested.
I think it might be the Mapes brothers with Transformers at the Moon that have an archive of lucky draw figures. I believe that's where the lucky draw archive is online for Transformers. There are a lot, and Transformers isn't the only toy line that Takara did that with. You know, they did that also with Microman. There's some crazy stuff there. So there's a lot of Transformers adjacent stuff. I guess largely I'm a fan of like the entire lineage of G.I. Joe, if that makes sense. Like, Transformers to me has always been an extension of that. If you look at how the toys were developed one after the other, it kind of is descended from G.I. Joe. But even before I knew that, it just felt like it was part of this greater brand, especially since you had like the comic with the G.I. Joe Transformers crossover. I always felt like I was collecting something bigger. And I was aware at the time that I was little that the Chronoform stuff was even somehow related to Transformers, and was collecting that and eager to find more about it at the time.
What's the Chronoform?
I have a Chronoform. I'm not Philip, so I don't have it right nearby me. But Chronoform stuff, okay, it's like the American Diaclone. I assume Chrono is because the first one they did was a watch, I assume.
Oh!
Yeah, the robot watch that you've seen, there's a lot of bootlegs of it, but the original one from Takara is Chronoform and is part of Transformers.
I had a Transformer watch at some point. I don't know if it was legit Transformers or if it was just an American bootleg. I would hazard that it was not a Japanese one. but I remember having a Transformer watch at one point.
There were a lot of them. There were a lot of them in the United States, and they were in weird spots, the stores, too. I remember, like, the jewelry section having the calculator watch that I ended up getting as a kid.
Yeah.
It's like, who goes into the jewelry section looking for toys?
I had a calculator watch as well at one point. Those were the days. I haven't worn a watch since middle school, so.
I would actually like a beater of a chronoform beater that I could just wear to, like, shows and stuff.
Yeah.
I've considered doing that.
You would have to replace the band at this point. There's no way that those childhood bands are still going to fit an adult wrist.
No, they don't. Yeah. No, I have. And they also snap very, very easily.
Even the fanny packs, like the G.I. Joe fanny packs, I can only wear it strapped around my chest because it will not fit around the waist.
You just need two.
Daisy chain them together. I can have a fanny pack on the front and the back, right and left fanny packs.
Yeah, I've done that before with the G.I. Joe mail-in belt. I had a belt buckle on the back and a buckle on the front. The problem with that, though, is that the belt is just too thin. It's just like this skinny little belt.
And see, this is where the problem with us being audio only is that no one's seeing how red Philip's face is as he's laughing at the idea of you with two belts on. Once I started working from home and I stopped traveling for work, my wardrobe took a real childish hit. And so I don't think I own a belt. Maybe I do it somewhere. But the last time I had a belt, I wore multiple of the Pocket Patrol packs. And I love those things, but those are not as popular as I think they should be.
One of the things I never got around to doing was properly archiving the Pocket Patrol pack, because there's like four variations of that.
Six.
There's six?
There's six.
Yeah. There we go.
Kaufman Jr. and I were doing that at one point, and we were sending pictures back and forth. I'll pull them out and send you a picture.
Yeah, that's one of those things that somebody else is doing that. So it's not as fun for me because I'm not really... I learn things whenever somebody else is posting it, but it's not as fun to go through the steps of trying to buy the stuff and then just have it.
Part of the problem with those is that I don't know... Like, we were not... I can't find all of them packaged, so I couldn't tell you what each version's packaging looks like. Henry Kaufman Jr. and I, a couple years ago... We're going back and forth because I just had a bunch because I like them. And he was like, oh, I think there's this. And we just figured out like a transition version with the stickers and everything.
The slanted shape sticker may fit into the full rectangle.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple different colors of the white. And then the square sticker slot says patent pending, but all the others are patent approved.
This is one of the downsides of doing articulated points is when we want to show off these things, we actually have to own them ourselves. So it can actually be pretty pricey doing this show. We're still not monetized, so we're not making any of that back.
I don't know if there's a way to monetize to the point that you could afford a collector's budget.
No, like we might get one Pocket Patrol for the year and then just share it between each other.
Well, certainly wouldn't be monetizing for anything we put on YouTube. There'd have to be some other sites with looser rules.
Some compromised photos of Philip for any better monetization.
Well, at that point, it's not compromising if you're doing it yourself, right?
What do you guys have for us next that's not G.I. Joe? Like, what else do you guys have in mind?
I'm currently working on a video of a specific Harley Quinn action figure who was released in the same scale, in the same design by three different companies. And I figure that's a very rare opportunity you have to do a one-to-one-to-one comparison.
That's a weird licensing agreement.
Somehow it happens. So I'm eager to show that off. I've got pictures taken. It's just editing and then doing the full record of me blathering to the computer about that. But, you know, this is a short month and we're running out of time already. So that's why I may end up doing that live stream.
When you guys do your live streams, what is the focus of a live stream? Is it just... to organically go through as much as you can in 2 hours?
When we first started doing it, the idea was it would be like our regular episodes where we'd have like three or four topics to cover, but with the added bonus of real-time interaction with the audience. Lately, it's been, oh God, we're running out of time to put a video out this month.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate truth of it. So, I mean, like I said, I'm not exaggerating when I say that I'm probably 40 or 50 hours in to the edit of the current thing that I'm working on, which once you get that far in, there was one night where I was just going to fall over, like, tired. And so I thought, now is the time to just set my computer to do a backup to a hard drive. Ooh. Because I don't want to lose all of this work if something should happen. So even though I'll be sleeping, I'll still be working because my computer's working.
As you edit, or as I guess both of you guys edit, is there a certain point in the evening where you're like, all right, no matter what tomorrow needs, I have to be done now? Like, do you have a pumpkin hour, or is it just caffeine and power through?
Generally, we try to avoid last minute deadlines where we have to be editing up all night because we have like one more day left in the month. But that does happen. But usually we'll get a few hours in on one day, a few hours into the next day, and we'll have enough time where we're not editing in a 12-hour marathon just to get something done.
So sometimes I do find that I'm just really jazzed about the topic, and I do have trouble going to bed because I actually am like excited. Like, I edit something a way that I like. It's like, oh, I can't wait to have this out there and maybe have some people enjoy it. And I get excited, and then I can't sleep and I just keep on editing, and I do power through a bit. But yeah, hopefully we're more on time with everything so that we don't have that problem. The process just kind of depends. There have been times, there was one time where my computer, for whatever reason, would get to the same spot in the video and it would just crash the entire, like, you have to render the file to save it. Once you edited everything, it just has to save it as one file. So you're rendering it and outputting it. And it would just get to like 89% or something like that and completely crash every single time. And I finally just decided that the problem was most likely software related. So I uninstalled. I did everything you could do except for buying a new copy of the software. And then it turned out that what I needed to do was buy a new copy of the software.
Oh, lovely.
You know, re-imaged everything. Like, it was nuts how much I went through. And it was just like, Philip, I think that we're going to be a little bit late this time. It's just kind of how it is. So it posted a couple days after the start of the month. But that was because, you know, I was on time, but you can only do so much. And one of the thing just doesn't want to output your video. What do you do?
What software are you guys using to edit?
Pat uses Adobe Premiere Elements, and I use an off-brand thing called MCH VideoPod, which is very cheap, but it allows me to edit down to a particular frame. And that's really all I care about when it comes to video software editor. So many of these cheap ones want to go by a full scene. It's like, I don't want the full scene. I want to be able to cut off this bit from this bit.
Yeah. I use Camtasia because that's what work bought me. And it is small and cheap. And if my videos are too long, it'll crash without shutting down everything first, which is also part of why I don't relish what you guys, I don't relish the work you guys put into YouTube, which is why I'm audio only. You know, it doesn't matter if I'm on a deadline or not. I cannot edit after 10:30 at night. After 10:30 at night, my brain is just like, now we're done. I'll still be up till 1 a.m., but I cannot edit. It's editing. I'll nod off every 13 seconds, but I'll turn off the edit and then I'll be up. And my body is immediately like, okay, we're done editing. Good. You can stay up now.
I think that there has been times where I've forced myself to lay down because it's like, Pat, you're being absolutely absurd, because I also finished editing at 10, only it wasn't PM.
Right. There are definitely times when editing the videos is a slog. And I think that's one of the reasons why we went down from having three or four subjects of video to just covering one.
Yeah.
Because it was just too much to edit. We had like 3 hours to cut down and it'd still be 45 minutes to an hour and 15. And it's hard to keep people's attentions for that. And sometimes it's like, I might love the Photon videos, but there are some of our poorest performing videos. It's like people don't care about Photon. Like, I care. You know, you always hope to get a nice response to it, but sometimes it just doesn't happen. But then there's times where it's like the Danger Room video I put out. I was having a blast making that one, and it was like you couldn't pull me away from editing it. I had to force myself to stop and spread it out over a few days. And then it was ready and sitting around for a few weeks waiting to go out, because this was the time where Pat was still working on his DeLorean video, and we were trying to see if that one would go out first or not. That one came out after. And it got such a big more response than the DeLorean one, which is very disappointing, because the DeLorean one is full of so much vital information on such a historical subject. I mean, it's a movie, obviously, but it is such cultural landmark. Yet this little video, which I was putting off just because I was, you know, it's a hyperfixation that month. And hey, look at all this stuff that came out over years ago that I found it, like, when I posted pictures of it on my own Facebook, nobody knew what it was. So I was like, okay, maybe there's a topic there.
Each of your videos, I'm really captivated. And I do really like that 12 to 18 minute when you guys hit that, because then I can watch two or three in a row. So being able to watch a few at a time is great. You know, a shorter length, while great for me, seems detrimental for everyone else. I don't know.
There hasn't been a lot of direct correlation that I have found necessarily on the length of the video and how many views we get. At least Philip's videos do much better than mine. They do. So maybe Philip knows the proper formula that I do not. Well, also the fun thing is when it's both Philip and I on the video, I have what I call the wall of sound, which is me, like, because I edit a lot from the waveform so I can see where I am and see where my ums and uhs are and where the large pauses are. But you, like, see Philip talk and then you just see nothing but lines coming from me where I did not shut up. And I'll often, like, if we do an episode together, I'll send Philip a message afterwards apologizing for not allowing him to get a word in edgewise, which I hope I'm not doing tonight.
I think you and I both talk probably more than Philip talks. And Joel, if he were here, is kind of the same way, as he always talks the least. So I do try to edit myself aggressively so that I don't sound like I'm the one talking the most.
I do the same thing. I know exactly what you mean. I cut out, like, large segments. There have been times where I think I've cut out, like, 3 minutes of me nonstop talking and Philip just kind of putting up with it.
Yeah, but you're putting out good information there. I don't want to interrupt you.
Sometimes I'm not, though. Sometimes I will say something, because in real life conversation, if you want to make sure that your point is understood, you say it, and then you're looking at the person to see if they understand, and sometimes you say it again. But in video, and especially on YouTube, you don't need to say something twice. People can just rewind. So I end up on the video saying something multiple times, and then when it comes to the edit, just chopping the second time, or the first time, if I said it better the second.
When I watch you guys' videos, Pat, because we're friends, we've known each other for a while, I really don't watch you. I'm constantly staring at your background and trying to pick out different things. Philip, like, I'm always trying to look at your comic book titles, and I see, or I'm assuming those are the Find Your Fates that are above the hardback trades.
Yes, they are.
See, this is what I look at. I'm constantly looking at your guys' backgrounds, trying to pick things out. I like all the comics and stuff like this. And I'm a book collector, so I'm constantly trying to see what people have on their bookshelves. And I know some of this stuff changes from time to time. I know some of it's static. That Zartan is impressive behind you. And then all of the different things, the different lines that Pat has is a little bit boggling, because as much toy as I have, I mean, it all falls into about 8 categories, not 15 to 300. But I think the septic tank is a really neat focus, by the way.
And I stumbled onto it backwards, man.
But to have the commercial one is really something special.
And I wouldn't have an interest in it if I didn't have an interest in trying to track down all the G.I. Joe commercials. I'm just loving those live action ones.
When Vinny D'Oliva sat down with us and chatted, and him talking about being a part of those commercials, that was wild. I've gone back and watched those commercials so many times after that conversation. But to have an artifact from one of them, I think that's really something neat.
Especially since, from what I can tell, not a lot of that stuff survived.
Yeah, well, from what he was saying about those costumes, it was really just a patchwork. So I can see why not a lot of that survived.
Like, there's a tank, I think, got turned into, like, an aquarium for one of the actors. And Robert turned it into an aquarium. That's, like, all he had left over from it. It had a Cobra logo on it.
I mean, I guess if this is what you do day in, day out, something like that isn't precious to someone like you or I, and it can just become an aquarium.
Especially when it's a toy commercial. It's not like they're making a big feature film,
right,
with a Hollywood A-lister that they know is going to be make money, you know?
Yeah, and the budget wasn't there either. You figure in an A-list Hollywood movie, they might be making a hero prop and a stunt prop, tons of other things. I think for that production, it was just like, we need to make one and hope that it holds up. Like, I was just watching one of those commercials the other day when our Duke starts to fall. I'm pretty sure that I can see, like, the lights at the top of the studio in the top of the sky before he falls.
Kills me. We still haven't found all of them either.
Still?
Still. Yeah.
How is that even possible?
I'm sure in back of some warehouse somewhere, there's a master tape gathering dust somewhere that has these things, but nobody bothers to dig those out. I know Hasbro has a few that they have just not shared online ever. Like, it kills me because JoeCon 2012, at the Hasbro booth, they just had a TV loop playing G.I. Joe commercials, and one of them was a Star Brigade ad I didn't have at the time, and I still don't have it 12 years later. And all I've found is a French version of it that is not the full thing. It's just kind of a small re-edit. But it's like, you got it. It's not coming out. It's stuck in a vault somewhere. And then I've seen a list of the 1992 commercials that were put together, and I have maybe 80% of them. And that's another thing. Like, there's no full ArmorBot commercial out there. Like, you look at the trading cards and talk to you about how Duke breaks into a Cobra base and steals the ArmorBot.
Right.
Like, we've seen clips of that in a montage commercial that's like the entire year's worth of ads put together in a minute-long thing. I've seen photos from Ren Roberts of filming that. And, of course, we have the trading cards. But the actual commercial, where the hell is it? I don't know.
This is what I think is really fascinating about what you guys do, because I know at JoeCon 2018, D-Class gave away thumb drives with a shit ton of stuff on it, which included commercials. And you're like, well, since then, we've found so many more. And there's still some to be found.
So that was my collection we put on there. And while we were trying to authorize it, I found a few more popped up, like the Impel trading card commercial. That was a late addition to that. It came out like the 2 days after I'd submitted all that stuff for them. They managed to sneak it on there, but
that's wild.
Like, and yeah, they're still making commercials, obviously, with all these crossovers of video games and all the Skybound. Skybound has been advertising out the wazoo with their stuff. And it's like, some of them, I don't know if it's right to qualify it as a commercial as it is just like showing off the comic book, but I've been saving those just in case. It's, you know, it's semantics at this point, but when you get like a new video game collaboration, there's very obviously a 30-second ad there, you know. Every once in a while, I still dig up a toy commercial I didn't know existed. Somebody else will stumble upon something like, there was a commercial for the last issue of Special Missions. I never knew they made commercial for the Special Missions comic.
I didn't either.
And so I wasn't even looking for that, but there it was.
So now you have to go back and look for other Special Mission commercials, other mainline commercials, or...
And that's the thing, is when you're searching for the commercials, you either get somebody who will get a block of weekday afternoon commercials and write out a whole list of what's in there, or you'll get somebody who puts up a 3-hour video of commercials from 1993 and then just moves on. And you just kind of scrub through that entire video. Is anything I'm looking for in here? And sometimes they don't put the date, or the date's wrong, or it just doesn't show up in your search engine for whatever reason. I don't know why YouTube search sucks so much compared to Google video search, because it's the same company. Why is their search not the same? Things slip through the cracks. I'm sure there's stuff out there. I haven't looked for foreign commercials in a while, so I'm sure there's more stuff that's shown up there. Surprisingly, France has an INA.fr was their website way back in like 2009 or something. That was like their equivalent of YouTube. And there were the best resource for foreign commercials that came from France for some whatever reason. I don't know. But it was great seeing. They had these videos that were just re-edits of American commercials, sure, but they also had a whole slew of original footage. Like, they had their own Tiger Force ads. There was their own ads for just their weird assortment of, like, toy line figures where they'd be a mishmash of two different years. But it'd be these full-length dioramas that were entire, like, a building you'd move in and out of, and this very cityscape, just very cool-looking things. And then there were some ads that had original animation in it. And then you had stuff like Australia, where they would totally reanimate an American ad, and the only thing would be different would be that the animation was now worse and people were talking in Australian accents. But otherwise, the script was exactly the same.
When he showed me that the first time, I was so confused. He's like, look at this. Philip has a really good eye for spotting whenever a better copy of a video has been posted, because, you know, he knows what he has in his archive. And if somebody posts, there's a lot of reposting that happens too.
Sure.
Where another YouTube channel will just take the same 90 minutes of commercials, tack on 20 more minutes and suddenly it's even longer, but it's just available elsewhere. But he's really good at finding better quality copies as he's going and remembering what quality he already has. So I appreciate that. But I was blown away when you showed me the animation that I still don't understand. It's not like they were animating out the weapons or for the violence. It was the same thing, just not as good. I still think that there's a talking point there, Philip. That could be one.
I agree.
Yeah, but you know, it's a long enough talking point.
any length is going to be great. This conversation is exactly why I tune into Articulated Points. This is exactly what excites me when you guys start doing odd shit. Who else is hunting commercials and commercial variations? Like, it's such a specific, esoteric. And speaking of, has David and his crew helped with the stuff that came out in Spain, commercials and things like that? Because I know their book series was dense.
I found a few Spanish ones before that, but I just don't know how many are out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's known unknowns and there's unknown unknowns.
Sure.
I know there are commercials like a full 30-second Eco Warriors commercial from 1992 that I don't have. And I know there's like variations for when Rise of Cobra came to DVD, how there were like five different versions, but saying like in 2 weeks, in 1 week, tomorrow, today, that where all that would change would be that. And I know there are versions of that I don't have. I'm not, those particular ones I'm not particularly, you know, too worried about not getting.
Sure.
Because the actual content of the video, aside from the date, is the same. But then there's things like, you know, a special missions ad for last issue. I didn't know that existed. And that's the things you have to always, you suspect they might be out there, but you don't know.
I'm sad that I never thought that G.I. Joe was alive at that point in time, because I would have joined the community so much earlier. And which is wild to me that even though I was using Yo-Jo, I was still like, oh, this is probably like a couple guys that are just weird and are into a thing that nobody else gives a shit about, because I genuinely knew no one. Every toy collector I knew was Star Wars. Every comic book collector I knew was either Batman or X-Men. Like, no one liked G.I. Joe but me.
Yeah, whenever I got back into things, of course, you pick up the comics, you know, and see what's going on in the comics. So I got caught back up, but in the back of one of the issues, there was, you know, they have a letters column, and they would say person's name and where they are from. And there was one of them that was like 45 minutes from me. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to see like what that guy's up to. So, you know, I sent him a quick message, and it turned out that he was so into things that he was getting lists of all the figures that were going to come out in advance, and had like some people that he'd call on the phone that he would talk to that were from Hasbro. And like, he knew what was coming out.
Wow.
So he would just send me lists of things. We're talking like 1990. I'm there getting lists of all the figures that are coming out like the next year. You know, by the end of it, I was getting lists of what waves they would be in.
Do you still have all that?
I do. Yeah, I do. And it would be a neat thing to compile.
Again, another Articulated Points.
Yeah. Whenever I finally got access to the internet myself, which could not have happened where I live. So internet access just was not going to happen. But once I went to college and I knew that I had access to the information superhighway, I made sure that I got on the World Wide Web, looked up G.I. Joe and met up with some other people and, you know, quickly found a bazillion posts from Corey Stinson and the what eventually became Yo-Jo of several websites, some of them customs and some of them archives. I can't even remember the name of those three sites. Yeah, I got into it really pretty fast.
Thinking back on how small G.I. Joe fandom got at point, I think it's still worth pointing out G.I. Joe, the comic book, was the number one selling comic book back in the day.
Yes.
Description-wise, it was definitely the highest at one point. And it's like
Spider-Man combined. It was outselling.
You don't get that big without people remembering that comic. There should be a better penetration in people's minds about G.I. Joe than there really is. And then Skybound comes around and suddenly we're selling in the 100,000s again after years of barely hanging in there.
I wonder how much of that is a Kirkman versus a Joe. And also, like, as much as I don't personally like the Bay movies, Transformers is front and center in everybody's mind. So I would love some shitty G.I. Joe movies just to revitalize us.
I mean, technically, Rise of the Beast.
Technically.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we've got three shitty movies that didn't help us. I would love some shitty movies that did. But I also am very much of the mind of G.I. Joe should always be animated and not live action. But I'm probably a minority on that one.
I would like it so we could go back to the days of 2D animation where we could have a cast of hundreds instead of having to keep with these five-person units. We can get a more variety of characters, you know?
I think a special missions kind of cartoon would be great so that you could do the five-person unit, but every episode is a different five-person.
I think G.I. Joe exists, and like there's so many different appeals to it that I think that I would like a G.I. Joe show that was willing to reinvent itself the following season, because I loved how in 1982 it felt like it's just this small team of people that are up against terrible odds that are going out there and, you know, fighting the good fight. And that's lost whenever you have your own aircraft carrier, your own space shuttle, and there are 200 people on the team.
Yes.
But at the same time, I also like my G.I. Joe where you have an aircraft carrier, a space shuttle, and a few hundred people on the team. So I think that I would almost like it to be something where they developed it so that it just was willing to make those same changes. And it doesn't have to be the same team or the same group of people, but G.I. Joe, the 3 3/4 inch storyline, did have several eras with their very own flavor of appeal.
G.I. Joe always felt to me like every couple of years is a completely different era.
Yeah.
You know, like 82 and 83 and 84 is not the same as 85, 86, 87 is its own, you know, G.I. Joe changed constantly back then. I would love like a Rescue Bots for G.I. Joe, something that brought in your 4-year-olds and your 5-year-olds again.
Yeah.
As well as something like Renegades that brings in your middle school kids. And then if we were going to have live action, a nice live action TV show that would bring in your adults, something that was encompassing all people and was willing to be as weird as possible. Having sections that are definitely for your military first guys, and then also having sections that are like Cobra Lod out, which is kind of what I'm enjoying with Skybound right now, is how weird they're going.
I really got to read them. I have the issues. They're just piling up. There's like so many to keep up with. Just not keeping up and falling further behind.
Well, right now, I mean, you got, what, 5 or 6 Void Rivals. Then you got 5 Transformers as of last week. And then 2 G.I. Joes.
Three G.I. Joes, right? Duke 1 and 2 are out, aren't they?
Oh, yes. Yes, you're right. 2 Duke, 1 Cobra Commander, 5 Transformers, 6 Void Rivals.
That's 13, 14 issues right there. If you want to experience how varied the G.I. Joe concept can be, just spread out international. You go to those Battle Action Force. I know it's not technically G.I. Joe, but
yeah,
like you got Red Shadows turned to Cobras, and they're mowing down Action Force guys every episode. They're just, you know, leagues of infantrymen just catching bullets left and right. But then you go over to the Japanese manga, and it is very much meant for kids. You've got a kid appeal original character. There's definite slapstick. And it's all the same characters across different countries, but they're all very different.
I don't remember which Joe Fest it was, but I went up to Roger and Josh's room and they were showing me a Chinese one where Destro and Snake Eyes were in a Jeep together as friends and died. And I think Destro had a flesh head and it was...
I don't even know what one that is.
Yeah, it was. I think it was Chinese.
I've got a Chinese G.I. Joe comic where it looks like I drew it. Quality is just not great.
It was not a good quality, but like Snake Eyes dies on in one of the panels and Josh was like, you gotta see this. And that is what I love about what Josh and Roger have been doing with After Action Report, digging up all these things and showing all these. I'm always excited when we have another reference guide. I mean, I could have 17 more G.I. Joe reference guides and be willing to buy the 18th. Same thing with Transformers or Star Wars or anything else.
You're current on all of Dan's books, right?
Oh, yeah. I love books. I collect books. And so, and with G.I. Joe stuff, I'll keep a set in on A's library and I'll keep a set in the main library. I even bought, I don't mess with Motu at all. I liked the cartoons. The comics were cool. I don't care about the toys, but I bought Pixel Dan's, was it Pixel Dan that put out the Motu guide? That thing is beautiful. Things gorgeous. but I only have one copy of Carson's book because...
How could you afford...
Right. At the time, I just couldn't afford a second. That thing is beyond impressive.
We both get called out in it. It's fun.
I got lucky enough to have one photo in there.
Yeah, I have one. I didn't submit it. I don't know why I didn't.
Well, I don't mean like a childhood photo. I don't have any of those. I just meant inside the guide, like one of my things is in there.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I got two of my pictures in there. I think there might be a third, but I can't remember. Then, yes, one of my childhood pictures is also in there.
Nice. Yeah, I wish I had childhood pictures. I have childhood pictures. Just, I think there might be one where you see like a Crimson Guardsman and a Targat, but... You know, there's not a lot of toy pictures from my childhood.
I could swear my mother has somewhere video of me opening up my present for 1984 whenever I thought that I was just getting a case to keep my disc camera nice. That's what I thought my birthday present was going to be because that's what I had asked for. And I remember lifting it out and there was Zartan underneath. And so I could swear my mother actually, she of course knew it was in the bottom of the package and filmed it.
Yeah.
But if that was on film.
Watching you freak out.
Yeah. So that would be a great piece of Kid Pat with G.I. Joe, if I could possibly get that. But it's difficult because I don't know where it would be.
I know at some point there is a Betamax recorded tape of me breakdancing at Christmas in 1986.
Were there G.I. Joes involved?
No, not at my grandparents' house, but... That shit has probably been in the trash years and years and years ago. So I don't have to worry about that ever showing up.
Unless Philip finds it because there are a bunch of commercials in between.
I can encode that stuff.
Do you still hunt down Betamax?
Actually, I don't have a Betamax. I have a VCR, though. VHS. So you're safe on Beta.
I had a Betamax until 2010.
You just were unwilling to give in to VHS? Or what
happened? You still thought it was going to have its day.
I just had a lot of Betamax and I had a Betamax player and it stopped working. And at the time I was doing accounting work, but I go into one of my clients' businesses and it was just kind of a junk shop. It had a bit of everything in there. No toys. They had a couple Betamax on the wall and I was looking at them and the lady was like, nobody ever looks at those except for, you know, Mr. Betamax. And I went, well, I have a Betamax player that stopped working. 2 days later, I get a phone call from Mr. Betamax, which evidently was a dude who had Betamax as his license plate. And he was a Betamax collector. And he was like, listen, I don't have that Betamax player. He's like, the part you're looking for, if it's not working, the parts you're looking for, you're going to have to get them from overseas. It's going to be worth more than the Betamax player. Would you trade me your broken Betamax and I'll give you one that works? And I went, yes, I don't care. He's like, I promise I'm not ripping you off. I don't care. I don't care what the value is. I don't care what the... It's a Betamax player. Like, what is the value at this point? I don't give a shit. Give me one that works. And that happened like two more times with the same guy. I just hit him up. Hey, my shit's broken. I'll trade you out. So in 2010, I just got rid of all of it. I was like, why is this in a closet?
Did you have any of the G.I. Joe cartoons on Betamax?
No, I didn't. But I had all of Arnold Schwarzenegger's movies taped off of TV on Betamax.
With commercials? So potentially G.I. Joe.
Potentially, yes. But I had Star Wars on Betamax. That's one thing I wish I kept, but I sold that. That I got money for and everything else. I shedded. But having Star Wars on Betamax would have meant, a proper Star Wars, not a remastered.
Yeah, I still need to find the original recording that we did from TV for The Empire Strikes Back, because I'm not certain that the end of it is the same as the one we've seen a bazillion times with the dish from the Millennium Falcon appearing. There's like a couple of shots that they actually changed in the end of Star Wars for most releases. And there are some rare ones. And I just want to know what it was that I watched a bazillion times. Which version did I put in the player and see, like,
grow up with?
I think when the first time Empire aired on TV, they filmed a little intro with original footage of Vader's helmet and then like voice of James Earl Jones over it. I got a video on my hard drive. That's what somebody put on Twitter when I saved.
All right, it is 1:30. It's 2:30 for you, my dude.
It is. Yep. I'm probably going to need to head out.
I genuinely love what you guys are doing. I enjoy your shows. I told you that when we first met.
Yeah, you were one of the first people that I, like, we launched Articulated Points. Of course, you know, the people that I already knew were kind enough to spend the time to give me some hits. But I think that you were the first person that I didn't know already who came up and said, hey, I really appreciate what you guys are doing. So I appreciated that a great deal. I remember returning from Jofaz and telling Philip, hey, Philip, we got somebody who said something about articulated points.
I was impressed.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us. Murray hit me up because he found a thing I was looking for, and we were talking about price, and we were talking about when is he going to come on and talk about just whatever, because he's collected forever and he's part of D-Class, and he was like, I would love to, but I would rather listen to you talk to Pat and Phil. And I went, well, I think Pat and Joel have talked about doing something. I don't know. I'm a fucking idiot. Let me hit up Pat real quick.
This has been the Order of Battle.